This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Well, it was another rough day in the grain and oilseed trade here today, but maybe not for the reason you would expect on a report day. Good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk here on this Tuesday, July 12th. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you with us. Thanks for making us part of your day again today, as we have plenty to discuss coming up here on the show today. It is a report day, the July World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates released earlier this morning. And for the most part, the report came in as expected. However, the grain and oilseed trade really did not have a chance to trade it here today, getting hammered by outside market pressure. The U.S. dollar posting new highs in the overnight session. The crude oil market collapsing below $100 a barrel again here today. A lot of outside market pressures, a lot of recession fears weighing on the grain and oilseed sector here on this Tuesday. And we're going to be talking about the market trade coming up here in segment 3 and 4 with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He is our guest analyst today. He is going to join us. We're going to get Matt's thoughts on the numbers we saw in the report, as well as the outside market activity weighing on grain and oilseed numbers here today. Livestock trade moving to the upside. Sharp moves higher in feeder cattle. One would expect that with the break in corn here today. We're going to talk about the livestock markets as well with Matt, and much more coming up here in segment 3 and 4 on the show today. Also coming up here on the show today, going to have a conversation about the rise in farmland values, how rising interest rates are affecting things, and how young farmers are having a tough time finding their way into the agriculture industry and buying farmland due to various factors, including foreign investment and investment from large private equity firms, and et cetera, et cetera. We're going to talk with Kirk Covington of Ag America about this issue coming up here in segment 2. So looking forward to that on the show today as well. Well, back to the markets though today, the WASDE report released, and then of course all the outside market pressure. I talked with Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX, just after the report release here around midday. Got Arlen's thoughts on what he saw in the report, as well as all the outside market pressure in the grain and oilseed trade here today, and also the livestock sector as well, the sharp move in feeder cattle pretty much after the report came out. I first start my conversation with Arlen talking about his thoughts and a recap of the July WASDE numbers.
Mostly fine-tuning, so to speak, relatively minor changes. The wheat crop came in a little bit larger than what the trade expected, and that was mostly due to a little bit larger winter wheat crop than what was expected, specifically soft red winter wheat, as well as white came in higher than expected. The spring wheat crop, for the most part, came in pretty much as expected, a little larger durum. That's where most changes were. As we look at the balance sheets for corn and soybeans, we saw some minor tweaks here and there, cutting crush numbers for soybeans on the new crop and the old crop, cutting corn feed usage, which was a reflection of the stocks number from the last report, but a little bit surprising since those stocks came in almost exactly what the trade expected, but USDA still cutting old crop feed usage for corn. So relatively minor tweaks, making adjustments for the acreage, where corn acreage went up slightly and soybean acreage saw more of a significant drop. Soybean ending stocks coming in about 19 million more than what the trade expected with that acreage reduction. And that was largely because USDA cutting crush estimates. But other than that, no major changes in South America or in the U.S. domestic balance sheets.
Now, on the flip side of the report here today, Arlen, we got to talk about the outside markets, a new high in the dollar again, crude oil breaking down here today. All of that appears to be a pretty significant weight here on the grain markets, despite the report coming out here today. Talk about what we're seeing. Is this mostly a dollar-led push here to the downside in grains?
Yeah, I start off nearly every presentation with a slide that says price is a function of supply and demand, but is modified by the flow of money. And that has certainly been the case. We saw on Friday's CFTC report that the index funds have become major liquidators of positions, which is very unusual for this time of year for them to do so. That suggests that they've been under some duress and they're having to liquidate some of their commodity positions. That has continued today. And we're seeing it in crude oil down 7% as we talk right now. That's weighing on the ags as well. The only real positive that we're seeing in the ags right now is in the protein complex. Other than that, we're pretty much seeing red on the screen.
Yeah, you mentioned the protein complex real quick there. Big jump in feeder cattle, it looks like, here after the report came out, probably waiting to see maybe what those core numbers would do. And now that we are continuing to stay double digits lower, it appears that's given some strength to this feeder cattle market, Arlen.
That's absolutely right. We've seen increased demand for feeder cattle with those cheaper feed prices today. A lot of these cattle producers are looking at this weather forecast for the Midwest for the pollination coming up in the next few weeks and raising concerns. So they see a chance to lock in some crush margins. They're going to do so, buying their feed needs of corn and on this down market and buying the feeder cattle. That gives a little bit of optimism for the fat cattle market going forward.
And again, that is Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, joining us here around midday here today, discussing what we saw in the USDA report, as well as the outside market pressure in the grains today and much more. Speaking of the report, with slightly higher corn acres, USDA on Tuesday bumped up corn production slightly to 14.5 billion bushels, but lowered soybean production by 135 million bushels to 4.5 billion. USDA increased Russia's wheat production to 81.5 million metric tons while leaving exports unchanged at 40 million metric tons. USDA decreased Ukraine's wheat production to 19.5 million metric tons and held exports at 10 million metric tons from June's estimate. And many in the trade feeling that Tuesday's new U.S. ending stocks estimates were slightly bearish for corn but neutral for beans and wheat, while we saw the world ending stocks estimates maybe a little bearish for corn but neutral for soybeans and wheat as well. Again, for the most part, everything coming in as expected on the report here today. We're going to be discussing the numbers again coming up here in just a little bit. Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net going to join us in segment 3 and 4 to talk about what we're seeing here today. Again, a lot of outside market pressure is going to be a big issue moving forward here. We've seen that today. Didn't really give us a chance to trade the report numbers at all. The VIX near 26 at midday. The dollar index cooling a little bit, but still near 107.9 after setting fresh 19-year highs overnight. 10-year Treasury yields trading near 3.03% as well. And crude oil prices down about 7% or more on the lingering recessionary fears as COVID restrictions and lockdowns increase again in China. That's something that's weighing on the trade as well. Plenty to discuss coming up with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.com. But first, we're going to have a conversation about farmland values and barriers to entry for young farmers. Kirk Covington with Ag America. He joins us next as we continue with more market talk on the way right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
And joining us now here on the program, we have Kirk Covington. He's the Senior Director of Partner Relations at Ag America. Kirk, great to have you on the show with us today. How are you, sir?
Good, Jess. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I appreciate the time. Let's dive right in. We're talking farmland and we're talking ownership of farmland, whether that be by an older generation, younger generation, foreign ownership. You know, we have the interest rate issues here in front of us as well. There is a lot that is kind of going on behind the scenes of farmland transactions right now in the U.S., isn't there, Kurt?
There really is. And, you know, the challenge with all this is, if you go back, just say through the last decade, the challenge always was, well, what's driving land values to continue to increase in some areas of the country, 6% a year, other areas, 10% a year? What's driving that? There's the one group that says, well, really good commodity prices tend to drive land prices. And the other group that says really low interest rates makes buying land a pretty cheap investment. And I would say we're experiencing today a little bit of both. Although I would say if you had to weigh this out and say which one is really has been historically the driver for increasing land values has been historically low interest rates.
I would agree with that. And as we look at the Fed and examine their interest rate hikes, we continue to see them inflation running rampant. In your thoughts, how is this going to affect agricultural lending and farmland values and more moving forward, Kurt?
Whether it's the local farmer, whether it's an investor in that land, interest rates drive and make the decisions. The Fed is talking about a 0.75% rate hike. We're already seeing a slowdown in acquisition financing of real estate. We're also actually seeing a decline in the refinance activity of many of our farmers. And that's just with a 50 basis point rate hike. There are two things driving this. One, if rates go up another 0.75 basis point, I think it does put a damper on the growth in land acquisitions and probably will start to dampen the price of some of these transactions across the U.S. There's another piece to this, Jess, as well, that we really aren't talking about. It's the confluence of rising rates and input inflation, right? Farmers today are paying on average, and again, I do business across the United States. Some people tell me my input costs are up 40% and I bought early. Some people are telling me, oh, that's not even close. Out here in California, my labor costs are up 25% on if I can find it. Plus my input costs are up. It's closer to 50% increase. So the combination, I think, are scaring off buyers and are also scaring off refinances.
I would agree with that. And you throw on top of that, this is not an issue that's only affecting established farmers and ranchers, but think about younger farmers that want to try to get, you know, build up more of their operation. They want to buy more farmland, millennials, et cetera. It's making it really tough for them to get started in agriculture right now, Kurt.
There's really not a great solution to this. You know, the United States government has attempted to do this, through some of their small beginning and young farmer programs. The reality of the matter is, unless you're willing to provide more than 100%, in some cases, financing of that acquisition, most young beginning and small farmers don't have the necessary capital. Even if it's a 10% down transaction, they don't have that kind of cash to come up with. Now, there are some innovative things that Ag America is doing. We refer to it as one of our launch products, which is helping young and beginning small farmers put a small down payment on lease. We'll buy the property. You lease it from us with a promise to buy that property at the end of the lease transaction, 5, 6, 7 years down the road. But again, you know, I think a lot of young people today look at this and say, as much as I'd like to be in this business or as much as I would like to grow my footprint in this business, these input costs are killing me.
Yeah, very, very true. I hear that as well from farmers and ranchers across the country on a day-to-day basis, Kurt. And as well, you know, we see that younger farmers maybe don't have the ability to or don't know that there are ways that they can get into buying more farmland, et cetera. It feels like that's opening things up for more foreign investment. And I know this is an issue. We've been hearing a lot about this, hearing about a Chinese company buying land near Grand Forks, North Dakota, for example, or et cetera, talk in Congress about barring certain countries from buying U.S. agricultural land. As you look at that side of the issue, Kurt, what are your thoughts there? What stands out to you with this foreign investment issue we're talking about?
You know, I think the foreign investment issue always comes to the forefront when you get into these positions, because most foreign investors don't look at that investment like you and I would look at that investment that says, if I go borrow the money at some rate, I've got to get some kind of return off that crop or off that dairy or off that feedlot that pays for my cost of doing business, which is my interest cost plus my input cost. a lot of these farm buyers don't look at it that way. They look at it simply as an opportunity to buy a high quality hard asset that is a hedge against inflation, and in some cases, you know, could potentially provide them a source of input costs, or grain, a source, places they can source their grain or other products to export back to their country. The other group that you see in this also is the private equity groups, right? And the private equity groups typically tend to look at the graying of rural America, the term that's used, the graying of rural America, and see, you know, farmers that are my age, and I'm still farming out in California, but, you know, 60 and 70 year olds who have maybe no kids in the business that want to take this business over, they really don't have a desire necessarily to lease that ground out and become a landlord. And so the private equity comes in and offers them a nice kind of parachute for that. Again, you know, they've been really aggressive, but we also see they look at this and say, well, wait a minute, time out. Costs, you know, my cost of doing business is going up just like any farmer's cost of business is. So the private equity component of this, I think, is probably going to slow down a bit as well.
Yeah, you bring up the private equity component as well. And I think of someone such as Bill Gates, who is out here buying a lot of agricultural land across the U.S. A lot of folks are talking about that. I know that's a headline name, but it's, to your point, that's a lot of what we're seeing. And I know as well, I think it's 40% or so of U.S. farmlands owned by folks over the age of 65. So, you know, you think about that and all those private, you know, equities and foreign investment, you know, some of those groups, they're also have the ability to just price people out of some of this farmland, Kurt.
Well, there's probably a third group there that we haven't talked about, and that is the high net worth individual that doesn't realize that we're potentially headed for a recession here, doesn't really care what interest rates are, that didn't care that corn was $2.85 just three or four short years ago, that doesn't know really anything other than that land is a store of value and a hedge against inflation. And for them, you know, a high net worth individual purchasing land, as you had just indicated, the Bill Gates or Bill Gates Foundation, I'm not sure which, probably looks at this as not as an investment like you and I would, but simply being a place to park his money and have a good hedge against inflation.
Well, Kurt, before we run out of time, any final thoughts you'd like to share with us? Any thoughts about Ag America, or maybe just some advice for folks who are worried about maybe getting priced out of farmland right now? Any final thoughts for us?
Well, that's a great question. I guess, you know, there's always the statement, there's no time like the present. I would say that, you know, if I were, whether I'm a young, and maybe people aren't going to want to hear this, particularly people in my industry, given that what I think is potentially some very volatile times coming ahead when it comes to inflation, interest rate environment, is today a great day to be out making a decision to go and put your fortunes on the line and buy a piece of property and either expand your operation or get into the business? My response to them is that Ag America is a great resource if you just want to talk to us, because we can tell that farmer, whether it's a young beginning small farmer, an old, you know, longtime farmer, somebody that's looking to expand their operation, ask the question, what's your advice, Ag America, in terms of what should happen? And so there's nothing more important than having that communication with the banker, and because a banker will tell you what he sees or what she sees in the market, and will happily share that information with you and help you make a, you know, what I think is an educated decision. Sometimes it's not always about just finding a way to make you a loan. Sometimes it's sitting back and saying, you know, maybe this isn't the best time to be making this decision. And so it's just harder and harder and harder for these young farmers to enter the market. This is just going to be a very difficult time for them without assistance from, you know, perhaps their parents or some related party that can help them at least partially finance the transaction.
Well, a lot of things to consider, and folks can learn more, agamerica.com. Reach out to you folks there and your team and talk with you guys and more. And Kurt, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us here today on the show. And it's a topic we'll be watching closely. We'll look forward to talking more again soon.
Great. Thanks, Jess.
Coming up, we talk markets with Matt Bennett of agmarket.net. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit fssystem.com and let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to talk about the market trade here on the day Tuesday, we have that USDA WASDE report out for July, but we had a lot of risk off in the markets with outside money flow, et cetera. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net joins us. Matt, great to have you back on, sir. Not a pleasant day for us to talk the grain market today, but still, nonetheless, great to have you back on.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, you're right. It wasn't a great day. You know, you come in here on Sunday night, call the market higher, fireworks right off the bat. You know, you're looking at 650 plus corn again, and happy days are here again, right? And then, you know, a lot of folks are thinking, I want to buy this thing. You know, this thing's going to take off and go. We got 2 weeks of hot and dry forecast. It's pollination. We all know that. You know, but the thing is that it just felt like to me, maybe a guy hadn't ought to be buying, you know, the open on a Sunday night when you're up that strong. I certainly understand why people did it, but the markets have been so shaky lately that I think one thing that you've seen that we'll get into in more depth is some of these funds have, you know, kind of backed away and said, you know what, I'll come back whenever this thing is a little easier to figure out. Or, you know, I mean, it's just been like so crazy trying to trade these things. But you're right, report wasn't bad. I mean, it was neutral, maybe a little unfriendly, but I mean, quite frankly, the numbers were so close compared to normal that you wouldn't think that we would drop like we did. But we needed a bullish report today, I think, to kind of stem the tide of this complete risk off event that we're experiencing over the last, you know, 24, 36 hours, and we didn't get it.
We did not get it. And to me, to your point, yeah, the report just felt kind of neutral. And honestly, Matt, it didn't feel like we even really traded the report at all. It came out at 11. We looked at it. If anything, it maybe pushed us a little farther to the downside because we didn't get any bullish news out of that report. But it really just felt like money flow today. And it was money flowing out of the grain and oilseed sector, Matt.
You know, would you have ever guessed that you'd get a 230 million bushel carry out on new crop soybeans and see beans settle 62 cents lower? You know, no, of course not. Would you have thought that you would have had a bullish acreage report for beans and see a week ago Friday into the next Tuesday, two straight trading sessions with taking the fourth off, you settled $1.42 lower in those 2 days. I mean, this market has not been for the faint of heart by any stretch of the imagination. And so you got to stop and ask yourself as a producer, when you get in a situation like this, you know, I know a lot of folks want to figure the market out, you know, and you don't want to sell at 650 because by golly, it was 750 before. I've been there. I've beat myself up over that stuff before. But let me tell you something, Jesse, a lot of folks in parts of the Corn Belt, I don't want to stress parts, have gotten a copious amount of rainfall since July 1 that they didn't expect to get. If you're one of those producers and you're still wondering whether or not to sell $6 corn or above, then I think you need to go back to the basics of, hey, let's not try to figure this market out. Let's figure out if we can make money. And if you can make money after getting 4 inches of rain, you know, on July the 6th, 8th, 10th, whatever it was, I think you can make a lot of money even at the market today. And so, you know, I think we need to break it down a little bit, quit trying to figure something out that's not able to be figured out, you know, because you and I can agree on one thing. A lot of this has to do with China talking about, hey, we're going to put more restrictions on our people again. Does it make sense to all of us over here who kind of moved on, I think, from that narrative as far as how they're handling it? No, it may not make sense to us, but that's what they're doing. And so then you look over at the crude oil market, just getting hammered today, and you can't expect whenever the forecast injects a little more rain, crude oil is getting hammered, China issues, you can't expect we're going to do anything other than trade lower. I mean, I think we're almost borderline lucky we didn't settle down the limit on corn because it sure looked like it wanted to do that for a while.
I would agree with you 100% with all of that. And to your point as well, you know, trying to figure this market out, if we could figure it out, we would be billionaires probably. But, you know, it's impossible to figure out really what's all going to happen. I look, though, at this market, huge down day today. I look at basis across the country. It's still relatively firm. It still really gives opportunity to make some sales if you go on the cash side right now, Matt. And it's something that has been interesting to me to watch basis remain fairly strong.
For sure. You know, I talked to a grower in Southwest Kansas. He texted me right before you and I came on the air, and he sold the last of his corn. I'm talking 125,000 bushels of corn yesterday. You know what he sold it for? $10 a bushel. $10 a bushel. And so, you know, we talked to last week. I told him, I said, if you do get a big run up on Sunday night into Monday, have an offer on the board. And what'd he do? He set his sights high, threw this huge offer out there, and they said, guess what? We're going to take it. What happens, you know, when you get in the panhandle of Texas or southwestern Kansas, you get in these areas where you've got a lot of cattle. You've also got some ethanol plants here and there because folks like to feed DDGs. You get in a bidding war between the guy that's feeding the cattle and the guy that's wanting to buy the ethanol. And quite frankly, you've seen basis levels in that part of the world at levels I've never seen before, quite frankly, for cash corn. So you're exactly right when you're talking old crop. Hey, let's talk new crop for a second. Yesterday morning, I actually sold corn in my part of the world for the first week of September for $7.50 a bushel. What is the bid as we speak? It's $6.86 a bushel. Am I going to be right? I mean, are we going to be over 750 by the time we get there at some point in time? We very well may be. I don't know if they're going to still be offering that basis. My gut feeling is that once they get enough bushels bought, of course, they're going to back off that just a little bit. But guess what? I can't go wrong selling 750 corn. I know that as a farmer. You know, I've got the farmer hat on right now. If I'm talking from the brokerage side of things, I've got to look at it from the farmer's perspective in that you can't go wrong selling $7 and above corn if you've got a crop or if you're buying a healthy level of crop insurance so you have insured bushels. We've got to remember to use tools like insurance, you know, in our marketing plan. And this is a year where it's, boy, there's a lot of haves and there's a lot of have-nots. I've talked to several folks that are dry as a bone, can't seem to buy rain. I feel for them. It's a very frustrating, a totally different type of marketing problem that they've got. But for those that do have rain, you know, they need to take a step back and look at this situation for what it is. It's you know, this rally of late was a bit of a gift. And so overall, I think the market structure is leading me to believe that you're not going to fall completely out of bed, especially with 2 weeks of the Western Corn Belt, quite frankly, not looking like they're going to get any rainfall whatsoever. And it looks like it's going to be pretty darn hot. With that being the case, it's going to be pretty tough to absolutely waylay these markets the way we saw today.
And that's a great point you make. That was exactly where I was going to go, is that with all of these factors in front of us still, the weather, you know, we got to worry about that here ahead. We look at, you know, all this outside market pressure, et cetera. But to me, we have a lot in front of us yet in this grain market. And I think about just, you look at the cash side, you look how strong basis has remained. There is a need for grain out there, not just across the U.S. from end users, but across the world. There's worry about our crop here. We're definitely not at the finish line yet. And so I think some of these supply and demand fundamentals are just had been taking a back seat, but they haven't really changed, Matt. They're still there, and it's something we have to watch very closely.
That's for sure. And so when you stop and think about if you looked at corn today, yeah, you got that little blip over 1.5 on old crop, you know, new crop. You know, you're pushing the 1.5 mark all the way around, okay? But what I want to say is this. Look at your stocks use ratio. It's 10%. I mean, anytime you get below 12%, we typically say you're going to have a rally in the market, either a demand rationing type rally or, you know, something to encourage supply, but you're going to get a rally in the market. And so 10% stocks to use ratio is tight. I mean, it's extremely tight. And quite frankly, on soybeans right now, We've had a couple of cancellations, but we needed to have cancellations. We were running above and beyond what the USDA was suggesting our export program was going to be. And you could have made a case for 100 million bushel carryout at times over the last few weeks. So, I mean, it's tight. It's extremely tight. And so, you know, talking about that, you might say, well, why in the world would we ever go lower? We can't lose sight of one thing. This is a futures market, okay? And so we're all going to sit around and say, can we get enough supply to get to the next year? Can we get enough supply to get to South America's growing season? How much are the Brazilians going to plant this year? And in one word answer, a lot. Why wouldn't they? Look at the markets over the last several months. They're going to plant fence row to fence row. And guess what? They've got new fence rows because they keep adding acreage. And so we have to understand it's a global marketplace. It's a futures market. And we have had every chance in the world and still do to lock in copious margins, especially in a situation where we've got a really good risk management program, which includes insurance, which includes all kinds of stuff like that. So bottom line is, for me, it's not all lost. You're right. Fundamentally, we're still in really good shape. But we also have to understand that from this point forward, while I can make a case for higher prices if we stay warm and dry, one thing that we said as a team last week, Jesse, is that if this warmer, drier forecast offers you the opportunity at much higher prices, hey, you know what? Reward the market. Reward the market, because that's what we're supposed to do. You know, is sit there and study the market, study our situation. What is it that's going to make us money, and take advantage of it whenever it shows up.
Again, that's Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, our guest analyst today. Coming up after the break, Matt will stay with us. We're going to talk about the livestock trade today, some positive momentum there. A few of our closes today: September corn down 43, 594. August soybeans down 53 at three quarters, 1468 and a quarter. Wheat markets anywhere from about 40 to 50 cents lower in Chicago, KC, and Minneapolis wheat. Coming up more with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net as we're back with Market Talk on the way right after this.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk here on this Tuesday, July 12th, USDA Report Day. Jesse Allen back with you here. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net continues to join us here on this Tuesday. Matt, let's talk livestock today. Feeder cattle, obviously the big winner, which I'm not surprised. That sharp break in corn, it felt like it waited for the WASDE to come out, and then we accelerated to the upside in feeder cattle and maybe found a little bit of support we've been looking for in the cattle markets. Is that what you saw? What are your thoughts in cattle first off today?
You know, my thoughts on cattle haven't changed much. As you know, I've been fairly friendly cattle for quite some time, with the caveat that we're going to raise a crop, you know. And so if you raise a crop and you've got ample supply of corn and you're not going to $8 corn for perpetuity, you know, I felt pretty strongly that feeders were going to be a pretty hot item. And then you get out into the end of the calendar year this year, into first quarter of next year, maybe even second quarter. Tell you what, fat cattle could be extremely good property. Any cattle could be extremely good property. I think numbers would lead me to believe that it's going to be hard for you to really break this thing, especially once again, if you don't take your feed costs up too much. You're exactly right. I mean, we learned that, you know, back in college. I'll tell you what, if corn prices go up, feeders are probably going lower. I mean, it's just kind of the way it works. And boy, I'll tell you what, corn getting hit squarely on the chin today absolutely made a benefit for the feeder market. And that's probably something you're going to see. And it's a very dynamic market. Whenever the funds had been in here short this cattle market for quite some time, I'll tell you what, you know, they don't stay short forever. In fact, there's been a lot of times whenever they don't get short at all, but they had been short, you know, and I think they've unwound some of this. I don't think that they want much more of the fund that provided for them over the last couple, 3 weeks. And so I do look for these feeders and fats to be good property moving forward. Again, with hogs, I mean, I don't know, $113 front month. I still feel like that's plenty. You're going to need a lot of demand, a lot of export demand to be able to keep hogs over $110 is just my personal opinion. But I would say this. If the cattle market does stay as strong as what I think it might, it's probably going to be supportive towards the pork as well. I think that you could see hog prices fairly competitive as well.
Well, and I know it looked like we had a little support in the cash hog trade here today as well. But I think, too, with hogs, to your point, I'm watching that July contract getting ready to go off the board. August right behind it. You know, we got a bit of a discount there between July and August. Then you look out to October. I mean, you know, we're way down there. So I'm going to be interested in the next couple of weeks how the dynamics shift in those front month hog futures here, Matt, to see if we, you know, say in October, we come up to the August contract, or if the August comes back down to that October contract.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's a huge inverse, a big front-loaded deal there. Are we going to be able to stay above $100 on front month, I think, is something that you and I could debate all day. Personally, the only way you do that is going to be maybe both things, but exports are going to have to be really strong, first of all. And second of all, you keep these cattle prices hot. It's going to be hard to kill pork prices. So, you know, I think a lot of times they do run hand in hand. I mean, similar to corn and beans. When one of them goes up, sometimes the other one is going to go up. I've got to think that if people are, you know, if you run cattle prices high enough, you know, and you go to the steakhouse and you stop and think when you really want to buy a ribeye that maybe you're going to buy a pork chop, that's going to be supportive towards pork, you know, if that steak goes too high on price. Now, for me, I'm willing to eat steak and drink a glass of water if I have to. If it's a good steak, I mean, I'm still going to go for the steak 9 times out of 10. But you know what I'm saying. It could be supportive for both. But, yeah, I mean, as far as livestock is concerned, if you keep corn from rallying substantially, I think all the way across the board, you've probably got some strength in these livestock markets.
Matt, fantastic analysis as always. Before we run out of time, any final thoughts for us today?
No, just keep your head. Let's keep our wits about us, and let's think about what blessings that we've had over the last several months. These prices are still good historically. I know they're not what they were, but that doesn't mean all is lost. And so figure your profit margins, lock them in, you know, and then hope for a better day.
Well, Matt, I know if folks need some advice, they can reach out to you and the team there at agmarket.net very easily. Phone call, the website. You guys have an app they could check out as well. A lot of resources for people to use, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We got a lot of good things going on. Hey, we just opened our 10th office the other day, so we've got a lot of good things going on. Feel free to get a hold of us. Find us at either one of those places.
And again, agmarket.net is a great place to start. With that, Matt Bennett of agmarket.net, appreciate it as always, sir. Have a fantastic week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, bud.
And again, Matt Bennett with agmarket.net joining us here today with his fantastic analysis. And again, you can learn more about them at agmarket.net and get a hold of them via phone, or you can check out their app in the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store here today as well. Recapping our final numbers, again, a rough day today in the grains. September corn down 43, 594. December corn down 42.5, 586.5. Front month July, 48.5 lower, 732 at three quarters. Soybeans, front month July, old crop down 48.25, 1592 at three quarters. August beans down 53 at three quarters, 1468 a quarter. November beans 62 lower, 1343. Bean meal for August down 810 a ton, 424.80. Bean oil for August down 361.6011. Chicago wheat, September down 42 at a quarter, 814 at a quarter. December down 42 at a quarter, 830 at a quarter. July Chicago wheat, front month 42 at a quarter lower, 801.5. Kansas City wheat, July front month 47.5 lower, 872 at three quarters. September down 47.5, 867 to three quarters. Spring wheat, September 45 lower, 918 to three quarters. December down 45 and a quarter, 931 and a quarter. In the livestock trade, August live cattle up 52, 136.67. October up 85, 141.27. December up 70, 147.20. Feeder cattle for August up 470, 179.57. September up 412, 181.52. October up 357, 183.45. And lean hogs, July up 45, 113.60. August up 62, 109 even. October hogs up 15, 92.60. Crude oil currently down $8.56 a barrel, $95.53. That's going to do it for today's Market Talk. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. Also talk SCN with Greg Tilka of Iowa State University. Have a great Tuesday. I'm Jesse Allen. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.
When it comes to protecting your investment in fuel and diesel-powered equipment, Diesel X Gold from FS clearly beats other diesel fuels. New detergents disperse contaminants to prevent sludge that plugs filters and causes unexpected downtime. And now, better moisture handling chemistry helps ensure your fuel stays dry, reducing microbial growth and fuel line freeze-ups. So when you're deciding what fuel to use, choose Diesel X Gold, absolutely the best fuel to power and protect your diesel equipment. Contact your local FS Energy specialist today or visit GoFurtherWithFS.com.